Hey there, everybody. It is March the 16th, 2011, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. Do not adjust your settings. Is something wrong? Do you hear something wrong? Don't adjust your settings. I have the flu. This is what I'm going to sound like for the next hour. There's nothing wrong with your settings. It's me. It's me. It's not you. So, welcome to the Dayquil edition of This Show Is So Gay. Would I skip a This Show Is So Gay? No, I would not. We have an incredible, incredible guest coming up a little bit later on in the show, representing a whole organization whose staff have chosen the music for tonight. It's really a community effort, a community effort. So before she calls in, we have a ton of news to share with you. I have a ton of views to share with you. As always, drop me a line at thisshowissogay@aol.com. If you have some sort of flu remedy that you think can knock me upside the head and have me well in the next hour, that would be great. This show is so gay at AOL.com. First, on to some news. Over in California, not sure if you guys heard about this one, a California high school teacher who allegedly called a lesbian student a sinner, she called her a sinner, in front of the entire class has been, quote, dealt with, according to district officials. She has been dealt with. Doesn't sound like, and I'm from Jersey, it sounds like we took care of a, which always sounds interesting when you're on Dayquil. They said, quote, based on our findings, we have dealt with the employee. That's from Leslie Ventuleth, the chief human resources officer for the Paris Union High School District. She said she would not elaborate on how the teacher has been punished. The Paloma Valley High School teacher, whose name has not been made public, and I'm not really sure why, allegedly drew an S on the hand of a student who wore a Gay is Good t-shirt and repeatedly referred to the student as a sinner in this public school in front of her classmates. It was one of many complaints of anti-gay behavior at the school submitted last week to school and district administrators by a group of concerned teachers and students. The teacher, again, has been dealt with. They took care of her. I kind of think that they should, first of all, say the name of the teacher. I don't know why that's protected information. And second of all, because if I'm a parent and I don't know the name of the teacher and my kid's in middle school, I would want to know because I'd probably request that my kid not get this teacher. And second, I think that they should probably do more than say that they dealt with her. What was her punishment? What are we role modeling? What are we saying to the children in this community? If we have a teacher who is calling a student a sinner, then we're addressing it. I mean, kudos to the school. They seem to be addressing it. But let's make a very clear statement to this community. Look, we don't tolerate this, and this is how we deal with it. Not just, we took care of it. I just want to keep saying that. It's kind of fun. So that's over in California. Over in Kansas. Now, we covered this story a few months back. We thought it was going in a different direction, but this is the direction it ended up in. This is in Kansas. Members of Kansas's gay community aren't happy. Oh, I have to tell you, the headline of this story is really the best headline. Headline of the week. Headline is, gays unhappy that sex ban remains on books. That's gays unhappy that sex ban remains on books. Members of Kansas's gay community aren't happy as lawmakers in Topeka have decided to leave on the books laws banning homosexuality. The laws banning gay sex have been ruled unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court, but the law remains in place in Kansas. And an effort to repeal it was killed this week in Topeka, leaving gay and lesbian Kansans, they're called Kansans, outraged. This is from Jackie Carter with the Metropolitan Community Church. Jackie said, quote, good people make bad decisions, and I believe this was a very bad decision. Jackie Carter is a leader of the gay and lesbian community in Wichita and the pastor of the Metropolitan Community Church. She says she's saddened by a move this week in Topeka to leave a law on the books that in Kansas that bans gay sex. She said it leaves thousands of gay Kansans under the impression that they are unwelcome in the Sunflower State. Did you know that? Did you know Kansas was the Sunflower State? I just learned that just now. She said further, quote, I read that message quite clearly. You really don't matter. So if you move to another state, we really won't care. Now, the House Judiciary Committee was considering a bill to clean up Kansas's criminal code when a pair of lawmakers removed an amendment from the bill that would have repealed the law banning homosexual acts. Laws banning homosexual acts have been declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, but the lawmakers say that they don't need to be repealed because they're not enforced. One lawmaker said, quote, it's a tempest in a teapot. I don't think it would make any difference. The statute is unenforceable, end quote. Starting Ken's quote, then get rid of it. what benefit does this serve keeping this on the books? I don't understand that at all. Thomas Witt, the chair of Kansas Equality Commission, said, quote, I think their motivation is pretty clear. They don't like gay people, and they're going to make sure in the eyes of the law, we're still considered criminals. It's not enforceable. It's something that's unconstitutional. Take it off the books. Why not clean up your language? That just makes you look archaic and silly. And yeah, I wasn't contemplating a move to Kansas. That wasn't in my realm of conceptions right now. But this certainly doesn't grease any wheels should I be contemplating such a move. So putting that out there. Kansas, clean up your laws or I'm not moving out there. We are going to play some music for you. I will try to retain my voice for the next segment, and this is requested by tonight's guest and her entire staff. This is You've Got the Love, Florence and the Machine. Enjoy.
Sometimes I feel like throw my hands up in the air. I know I can count on you. Sometimes I feel like saying, Lord, I just don't care. But you've got the love I need to see me through. Sometimes it seems the Lord is just too rough. Anything goes, no matter what I do. Now and then it seems like life is just too much. But you got the love I need to see me through. When food is gone, you are my daily need. Oh. When friends are gone, I know my Savior's love. Things you love, you lose. But you've got the love I need to see me through.
Who's got the love? That's Florence and the Machine telling us that you've got the love. That's a great little tune. So everybody is abuzz today because I don't want to ruin anything for people who haven't seen last night's Glee. So if you've not seen last night's Glee, fast forward maybe a minute and a half into this podcast, and then I won't spoil anything for you. Kurt and Blaine kissed. That was a big deal. Everybody's all a flutter. It was on all the message boards today. Everybody's talking about it. It was a quality kiss. Kurt sang Blackbird, and then Blaine, you saw it in his eyes. He was looking at Kurt in a different way, and then he went and talked to Kurt about it, and then they kissed. It was really, really nice. So validation for all those of us who were waiting for this kiss, but just one of the best moments on TV this year. And people have been saying that some of the best moments on TV this year really have been with Kurt and Blaine. And so the fact that the strongest storylines are tied up with these gay characters is obviously a huge step forward. So we're a fan. Kurt and Blaine, you guys keep on kissing. But let's just, why don't you stop there, though? That's enough for you two. You guys can kiss, and that'll be our role modeling for now. And then maybe later we'll move on to other things. But for now, kissing, let's stick with it. You can now turn back on your podcast, because I'm done with my Glee recap. So, some other news from across the world? Let's break out of the U.S. Over in Ireland, my homeland of Ireland, that's not at all my homeland, Irish Senator David Norris, an independent, has launched his campaign for the presidency of Ireland. Well, why would we be covering such a thing? Well, obviously, it's because he's gay and he's out, and that's fantastic. And so he was asked if Ireland was ready for an openly gay president. And Mr. Norris said, quote, "I don't see myself as a gay president. I see myself as a president who happens to be gay." He added, quote, "I think the Irish people are a little bit bored with my sexuality." There you go. He said the Irish people knew him and the values, knew him and his values, and knew he lived a decent and good life. The Irish president is largely ceremonial head of state. I didn't know that. I thought they had more power than that. Directly elevated by voters to a term of 7 years, polling earlier this year showed Norris with more support than any other potential candidate. The election will be held in October unless the current president, Mary McAleese, leaves office early. Norris would be the world's only openly gay head of state. That's pretty darn cool. The other one, the Johanna, I can't say her name. I don't want to bungle it, but she's the openly lesbian prime minister of Iceland. She's the head of a government, but she's not the head of state. If you guys are playing Gay Jeopardy at home and you're thinking, wait a second, he wouldn't be the first head of state. There's that woman in Iceland whose name we can say, but Ken can't seem to. No, she's the head of a government, but she's not the head of state. Back to the U.S., some good news, and this is kind of remarkable because you would think that we would have eliminated this barrier. You think we would have hurdled this already, but indeed, no, this would be a first for us. A Senate hearing was scheduled today for a judicial nominee who, if he is confirmed, would become only the first openly gay male to sit on the federal bench. I thought we had done that already, but we hadn't done that. The Senate Judiciary Committee is set to consider the nomination of J. Paul Oetken, whom President Obama nominated in January to become a U.S. District Judge for the Southern District of New York. Senator Chuck Schumer, who recommended the nomination of Oetken to the bench in September, is set to preside over the hearing. President Obama officially nominated Oetken to the position based on Schumer's recommendation. So, hats off to J. Paul Oetken. We hope that you have a smooth sailing confirmation hearing and that you become the first. I just can't believe he would only be the first. He'd be the first openly gay male to sit on the federal bench. What else? What else do we want to tell you about? There's so much other news. We got to go with the really sad news. Unfortunately, it seems, as was reported today, that there was indeed another teen suicide. Just so unbelievably sad. It happened back on February 23rd, but the wires are just breaking about this now. His name was, excuse me, his name was Nicholas Kilo Jr. He was 13 years old. He used a gun, gosh, to commit suicide on February 23rd. His mother, Jacqueline Kilo, said her son was bullied for many years. She said, quote, "We would talk and he would say that the bullies were not worth his time." It is not known whether Nick considered himself to be gay. However, when he switched extracurricular activities from football to band, rumors that he was gay circulated through his school. His mom said, quote, "After that, the bullying spiraled out of control." Because he switched his extracurricular activities, my God, from football to band. Unbelievable. Another mother whose son has also been subject to bullying recounted a story about a bus ride home from a football game where Nick was allegedly spit on by an older student. He refused to share details and told the other mother he would handle it on his own. His parents had no knowledge of the attack. So sad. So unbelievably sad. I wish I had something just cathartic and insightful to say about this, but it's important that we cover this news and that we celebrate Nick's life for the 13 years it should have been. It should have been 10 times that. Should have been 10 times that. So really sad there. Some positive things. Nick scored a 152 on his IQ test, and he was a second degree black belt, qualified, and a creative inventor. Nick Kilo Jr., 13 years old, died on February 23rd. So Hearts go out to his family and to all the youth out there who are dealing with issues like bullying. If someone's got the silver bullet, if someone's got the solution, please, please come forward, because this has got to stop. Stuff like this has got to stop. I think we're going to play some music. We're going to welcome a guest after the song. My voice will come back, I promise you. Welcome back to the Dayquil edition of This Show Is So Gay. This is a song called Temptation by New Order. Enjoy. Good stuff. All right. I feel it is time to welcome a guest. Guest, are you ready to be welcomed?
I think I am.
And you've been forewarned that I just did another Dayquil shot.
I have been. Yes, yeah. And thank you for that warning.
Yeah, good luck with this, Sharon. Let me introduce you. Sharon Staple is the executive director of the New York City Anti-Violence Project, which is dedicated to eliminating hate violence, sexual assault, stalking, and domestic violence in lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and HIV-affected communities through counseling, advocacy, organizing, and public education. Prior to joining AVP, Sharon was the director of the Family Domestic Violence Unit at South Brooklyn Legal Services. Before that, Sharon supervised the Legal Aid Society's family law units in the Bronx and Harlem and the Citywide Domestic Violence Unit. She is a member of the New York State LGBT Domestic Violence Network, the Lawyers Committee Against Domestic Violence, the former co-chair of the New York City LGBTQ Domestic Violence Task Force, and the chair of the New York City Bar Association's. Sharon, I'm sick. I don't have time for all of this.
Well, you also have an old bio. I'm not nearly that busy anymore.
Well, these are all fun things, so let's just pretend you're still doing them. And the New York City Bar Association's Domestic Violence Committee, these things are true. She taught at the City University of New York School of Law and Hunter College. She's doing unbelievably vital work. Now she's got me even sicker because I had to read all that. Sharon Staple, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you so much for having me, Ken. I have to say that was incredibly impressive. Thank you for that lovely introduction.
You did all those things.
I did do all those things. I don't currently do all of those things at the same time anymore.
Okay. So you are sleeping.
Occasionally.
Okay. We like to check in every now and then to make sure. I guess the longer the bio, the more I check in to see if they're sleeping.
That's very sweet of you. I would like to point out I don't actually have the flu right now. You do. So I think maybe we better be talking about your sleeping and whether you're getting better.
You've clearly already talked to my mom who said, don't do a show. No, no. Of course, we have important things to talk about, Sharon and I. Do we not?
We have very important things to talk about.
Sharon, for people who do not know the Anti-Violence Project, give us the overview.
Well, you actually gave us the overview when you read our mission statement. But basically, AVP, so I'm going to refer to the Anti-Violence Project as AVP because that's the vernacular
nice.
That we use.
Nice.
We are the largest organization in the country dedicated to eliminating LGBTQ and HIV-affected violence or related violence. And we do that through providing direct services in New York City to survivors of anti-LGBTQ and HIV violence. And then we also have work that we do on the local, state, and national level through networks and coalitions that we have that I hope we have a chance to talk about and moving policy forward that would eliminate this violence altogether.
So the first misnomer, because people are going to be confused, it has New York City right in the title, but you break out of the bounds of New York City.
We do. The organization was created in 1980 by a group of community activists who were responding to anti-gay violence that was happening in Chelsea. Mm. And so at the time, it was named the New York City Anti-Violence Project, and it was focused not even just on New York City, but really specifically in Chelsea for the first couple of years.
I didn't know that.
Yes, and so, but 30 years later, we have found that the need has increased and that our expertise has increased and that we have something to say on the state and national levels as well. And so we do that through a variety of coalitions and networks with partnering organizations that are as expert and smart on these issues as the folks at AVP are.
Wow. Now, I feel like at some point people said, let's just drop the New York City piece. And other people said, no, no, no. That's who we are.
Well, now you're getting into the whole how to brand a nonprofit issue, which I don't think is as interesting conversation for a radio show. But yeah, yes, you can rightly assume that the conversation has happened. I think people know us as AVP in New York City. They know us as the New York City Anti-Violence Project in the rest of the country. But at the end of the day, we just want them to know us. We want them to know that we exist, and we want them to know that we have many, many partnering organizations throughout the country that also exist, dedicated specifically to addressing the issues that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and HIV-affected people face when they're experiencing violence.
Now, are any of those original 1980 activists still involved in the work?
You know, it's interesting. So I started this job about 2.5 years ago, and the first thing I said was, who else has done this job before me? Because I sort of need to talk to them.
Yeah.
I had been friendly with the past few executive directors over the years, but over the course of the last 2.5 years, I've gotten to know every executive director from the founding executive director on up. And in addition to that, we have an enormous and wonderful and fantastic cadre of volunteers, many of whom are former board members, former clients, former staff. You know, we once people find out about AVP, they don't leave us. So we have a long history, and we have a lot of great storytellers who remember that history as well.
It's like a good cult.
Exactly.
It's a good cult for positive change. Now, who was the first executive director?
His name David Wertheimer, and he's actually on the West Coast now. And he is a wonderful, wonderful man. And we celebrated our 30th anniversary this year. Well, actually, I should say we commemorated our 30th anniversary because we don't actually
right.
celebrate the work that we do.
Right.
But we brought together for an event that we had in October all of the former executive directors. So I got a chance to meet David face-to-face. And he, myself, and another executive director, Richard Hames, got a chance to sit down in a little press huddle with pre-event press, and it was so interesting to see the arc of the work over the sort of decades. We each represented, I think, one decade. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it was cool.
That is real. I'm so sorry I don't know this. Are you still in Chelsea?
Well, we are actually, if you'd like to visit our offices, we're a block away from Macy's in Herald Square.
I'll be right there.
We're right there. But we actually provide services in all five boroughs and have recently, for our direct service, we run a 24-hour hotline, which at some point I hope you'll let me tell you what the number is. But we run a 24-hour hotline. We provide services throughout the five boroughs and have recently started a intake in the five boroughs so that our main office is in Manhattan, but we have a sort of satellite intake in all of the other four boroughs.
So let's talk about these services. So you're doing direct services, you're doing community advocacy work. How do you distinguish between those two? What are examples of those two?
Direct services are really what folks need when they've recently experienced violence or if they are the friends, family members, or loved ones of people who have experienced violence, right? So that's somebody who needs to talk to somebody about something that's happened specifically to them or to someone that they love. And those services are generally, like I said, we have a 24-hour bilingual English-Spanish hotline so people can call us at any time. And then once they are talking to one of the AVP hotline answerers, the people who answer the hotline.
The very well-trained answerers.
40 hours of training.
There you go.
Before you can pick up the phone.
I was feeling pretty confident in that, yeah.
Yeah. And our hotline, after going through the hotline training, which all of our staff, board, and the volunteers who answer the hotline do, everyone who goes through the hotline training is also then a certified rape crisis counselor as well. So once someone calls our hotline, we then talk to them about what they need. And you know, people need different things. We don't assume that everybody needs the same thing, but the types of things that are available are crisis intervention, safety planning, short-term counseling, advocacy within systems, particularly systems that might be either intimidating or overtly homophobic or transphobic, and then whatever other information or accompaniment or anything else that we can do for someone. Basically, if we want to meet folks where they are, and we want to figure out what they need, and we want to help them get what they need. And that's what the direct services part of the organization does.
And the community advocacy?
So the community, that department is called COPA. It's Community Organizing and Public Advocacy.
Okay.
And so COPA's job is to both raise awareness about the issue and organize folks to stop this violence. And we do that in the city through a number of different initiatives. The most popular one is what we call Safe Bars, Safe Nights, where we go into bars that are typically known to be LGBT-friendly or LGBT-targeted bars where folks are going to be hanging out. And we talk to people about safety and about how to stay safe, and we give them information about AVP, and we tell them about how they can get involved in the organization. But we'll do, you know, so we do that all year long and regularly. And then we also respond to incidents of violence and communities that have been affected by violence to see what they need and what we can do to help them get to the root of the violence and end that violence. On the state level, we coordinate what we call the New York State LGBTQ Domestic Violence Network.
Mm-hmm.
So we basically coordinate a network of organizations that are providing LGBT explicitly competent services for folks who are experiencing intimate partner or domestic violence. And then on the national level, we coordinate the National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs, which is a coalition of more than 40 organizations throughout the country that are either organizations dedicated to anti-LGBTQ violence or are programs within broader organizations that are dedicated to anti-LGBTQ violence. So through that work, what we're really doing is helping both create and sustain these organizations at a local level so that the resources are available to people wherever they are. And we're moving policy forward on a state, on a city, state, and national level that we think will be most effective in addressing and preventing violence against LGBTQ folks.
Well, so let's talk about the state level, because, you know, I'm a New Yorker, so I know that state pretty darn well. And I think there are a lot of misconceptions about New York that, oh, well, I'm sure the AVP is not encountering any resistance in all of their efforts in New York. But and your laughter is quite telling.
Well, you know, I think everyone sort of thinks that we, when you're in New York City, you live in sort of this lovely gay land.
Yes.
Where everyone is friendly and wonderful. And, you know, that's sometimes that's true. And certainly, you know, we understand in New York City that we are far more resourced and far more, we have far more options for folks than in many, many rural areas. Or even other cities that aren't as LGBT, aren't as heavily populated with LGBTQ
right.
folks. But it is not a New York City is not, in fact, all of New York State, which is a surprise to many people, primarily living in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
They are the center of New York State.
Turns out there's stuff north of Westchester. Who knew?
There is. And in those counties, you find the same sort of biases and issues in rural areas as you find with any other rural area.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, how are you feeling about your work on the national level?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. The Matthew Shepard James Byrd Jr. hate crimes law was the first law passed by Congress. Yeah. and signed by the president, and was the first time that sexual orientation or gender identity were explicitly included in federal law in a way that was not discriminatory.
Yeah, that's a big deal. It was a big deal.
That, I think, was seen as a big LGBT victory. And, you know, and I think to the extent that it matters that the federal government can use the word sexual orientation and gender identity in a respectful way,
mm-hmm.
And saying that we matter and that we need to be included in protections, that was a big step. But I'll tell you, I think a lot of the work that is actually happening is not as visible as some of the legislative initiatives,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that it's not the sort of flashy front page news kind of things that are happening, but we're having conversations with this administration in a way that we've never had before. I mean, we've been excluded from the table, never mind, you know, not acknowledged. We
right.
just are excluded from the table. And now we're being invited to the table and asked to talk about what matters to LGBTQ folks. And in terms of moving administrative policy and making the administration more accountable and more accessible, accountable to and accessible by LGBTQ folks, I think we're doing good work and,
mm-hmm.
and making really solid progress.
We had Judy Shepard was on our 100th show a few months back.
Judy Shepard.
Isn't she? Yeah. I think the point of the show where I called her mom, that probably threw her off a bit, but other than that, it was really good. And no, but she said just how that really was a turning point and being actively invited to the table, not just fighting to get a seat there, but people saying, oh, hey, do you want to come over and have this conversation? It's just such a big deal.
Well, and you know, Judy Shepard is actually one of the keynote speakers at this year's National Crime Victims Awareness Week,
which is held
every week. I mean, every year for a week.
Oh, my God. I hope it's not every week. I can't handle that.
We'd all be exhausted.
Burnout.
Every year, there is this national week to talk about crime victim awareness. And Judy Shepard is a key part of this year's initiative. And the office that the Department of Justice's Office for Victims of Crime that runs this program has reached out extensively and over long periods of time to us and to the National Coalition around LGBT inclusion. And I think that is one of the most, you know, visible and public manifestations of their work, to have Judy Shepard be such a keynote person. But really, there's a lot going on behind the scenes that is also equally effective and impactful for people on the ground, for folks who need services. These organizations are really trying to make these services available for LGBTQ folks.
And a little tip, if you're going to hear her keynote, if you call her mom, it can be a little creepy. I'm just putting it out there.
Well, you know, I actually spoke on a panel. I'm not surprised to hear you say that, because I spoke on, well, it wasn't really even a panel. It was just sort of Judy and I. And we spoke, first of all, I didn't want to say a word. I just wanted to listen to her the whole night.
Oh, yeah.
But second of all, the first question in the audience was, I feel so connected to you. Like, I feel like you're my people. And I think everyone who talks to her has that reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have to talk about you. Are you ready to talk about you?
Sure. Talking about Judy is much more interesting.
Well, let's see. Let's play this out. How did you get involved in this work?
I took actually a hotline training at a domestic violence shelter in the late 80s.
Okay.
You know, I started as a child, obviously.
when you were 8, yes.
Exactly. And really, it was sort of one of those things where I just fell into it. I'm sure it was, I don't even remember how now, but it was probably something that one of my friends was doing, and I thought, oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
But when I got there, it was like the minute I got there, it sort of clicked for me, and I was like, oh, if we're going to talk about human rights, like, one of the first things we need to talk about is safety and freedom from violence. And from then, it just, my career sort of evolved, obviously focusing on intimate partner and domestic violence for a long time. But really, you know, AVP, and I don't think we made this clear, but I should say this out loud. We work with folks who are survivors or victims of hate violence, sexual violence, intimate partner and domestic violence, and HIV-related violence, and sort of then all of the types of violence that might be some part or amalgam of all of those things.
And, you know, we talk about, I mentioned it before, just kind of threw it out there about burnout, but let's talk about burnout. You're not doing work that isn't draining. That was the Dayquil, enabling a double negative.
I got you.
Thank you. Work with me here. So the work is draining, I would imagine. I mean, you go on the website, and there are beatings and hate crimes and horrible incidents with just terrible regularity. How do you keep going? What kind of time off do you take? You do take time off, right?
I do take time off.
Just checking.
My partner is very clear about, we need to take time off if we do that.
So how do you sustain yourself? And let's also put out there that you are at the head of this organization, so you are in that role where you're looking out for a staff who also need to sustain themselves.
Yeah.
How do you go about that?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of things. I think, you know, the topic itself can be scary and depressing and disheartening. But the response to violence and the anti-violence work that's done is incredibly inspiring, and is really, it's why we all continue to do the work, because there is change and things are possible. And it's actually quite, it's not as scary on the inside as it seems like on the outside, right? Because it is, we work every day with people who survive and who thrive and who really want to take their experiences and make the world a better place for people. And you can't get more inspiring than that. And,
right.
You know, I start to go into cheesy when I talk about this, but it really does sustain me and the work that I've been doing over the last couple of decades. Let's not age myself too much. but I also think, I think that the concept of self-care and the concept of making sure that we are healthy ourselves so that we can be supportive to other people is really, really important. And it's something that we talk a lot about at the organization. And I'm not going to pretend like I've found any sort of perfect balance. And I try really hard to lead by example, and I don't think I'm always successful at it. But I do think that there are ways that crisis organizations can work to not be in crisis all
right.
the time.
Right.
And that really has to be the focus, because the crisis doesn't stop. That's why we exist, because people are in crisis. So you have to have systems and structures in place that allow people to respond in a healthy way. And that's what we sort of aim for at AVP. And that's what I think all of our national coalition members aim for as well, and all of our state partners. Like, that's what people are hoping for. And then there are just times when it just feels overwhelming and unbelievable that this much violence is happening
yeah.
in this country.
Yeah.
And we need to be the voice for the folks who are affected by this violence. And that's when you sort of, you know, suck it up and get the work done and then rest after,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah. Now, if I were here in Vermont, as I am, and I was on your website and I'm thinking, gosh, this sounds like amazing work, I wish there were some sort of pledge I could take.
You are a very thorough researcher, Ken. There happens to be a pledge that you can
take. Well, look at that. Tell me.
It's on our website. We launched last year the I'm Anti-Violence Pledge, and it's actually on our homepage at avp.org. But we also have a Facebook page where you can like us on Facebook, and then there's also information about the pledge. But the pledge basically says, it recognizes that, you know, violence is, the root of violence is a number of different things, and systemic violence is certainly one of the things that we focus on a lot. But we also want to talk to people about their own attitudes
yeah,
towards violence,
exactly.
whether that's awareness or lack of awareness, right?
Right.
And really encourage people to think carefully about it. And so this pledge goes through a number of sort of steps of, you know, I pledge to be nonviolent, and I pledge to think about it carefully, and I pledge to act in a way that encourages nonviolence. And so, yeah, so if folks are interested and folks are wanting to demonstrate that nonviolence, they can sign our pledge.
Now, I happen to have a camera sitting here next to me. What if I wanted to take a picture? This is the best script ever.
I think you just need, you could interview yourself, I think, for this interview. You know so much about it.
Well, I should tell you, I'm hoping that this whole thing counts as my interview for the senior development officer. I just want to put that out there.
So you've noticed that we also have a job posting as well.
It's two birds. It's one radio interview.
Very creative, I have to say.
Yes.
We did, yes, and actually we launched the I'm Anti-Violence Pledge in 2010. But when I got to AVP in 2008, we launched this really cool I'm Anti-Violence and Pro campaign.
Yeah.
And the campaign was on buses and subways in New York City in 2008, but it got such a great response that we continued it. And basically what we do is a part of, like I said, when we go out to the safe bars or safe nights, sometimes what we do is take our camera with us and these I'm Anti-Violence sort of signs,
yeah.
right? And ask, and basically it says on it, I'm Anti-Violence and Pro, and then you fill in your blank, right? So you can be, people are pro a lot of things, and there's a slideshow on our website that shows you just some of those things. So what folks can do at home is print out the I'm Anti-Violence little piece of paper,
mm-hmm.
put in their pro, take a picture of themselves and send it to us, and we'll put it on our website.
Nice. So it could be like,
yeah.
I'm Anti-Violence, I'm Pro DayQuil.
Pro DayQuil.
There you
that
go.
Would be a good one.
It's really a
right
strong
now.
Stance.
We've had pro a lot of stuff, I have to say.
Oh, tell me your favorites.
Is fun. Some folks are pro their animals or their family members. Some folks are pro celebrity. Some
nice.
Folks are pro civil rights based issues. It's really fun. And some folks, and for those of you at home, are pro the friend standing next to them with an arrow pointing
oh,
in their direction.
Look at that.
So you can do this with your friends as well.
It's like a parlor game too.
Exactly.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we have to talk about some of the musical selections for tonight.
Yes.
Now I have to tell, now we talked about this off the air, but so what normally happens is that our guest requests music that's in their own head, but how did you approach this, Sharon?
Well, I when you sent me the question about the musical selections, it happened to be several weeks after we had had a staff meeting where at the beginning of every staff meeting we'd have a check-in question. And one of the check-in questions was, what song inspires you right now? And so we had such a wide variety of songs, and, you know, it being a check-in question, I didn't write them all down. But I was very impressed with the diversity of music devotion that was, yes, in the room. And so when I got this question from you, I actually emailed the full staff and said, you know, I'm going to go on this radio show, and Ken has asked me this question, and I sort of want to tell him what your songs are. And so, aww, as you could see, I sent you a whole long list that there's no time to play, but did pick sort of the top five.
Some good stuff. Yeah. Now, because what would normally happen, Sharon, is that I would give you the name of a song and you would tell me what it says about you, the guest.
Well, what I can tell you is what all of these songs say about me, and now this is going to sound a little corny, but
love it.
It is true, is that when I am looking for that kind of, I am at the bottom of my, I'm at the end of my rope and I need some inspiration, it's actually the AVP staff that I look to for that inspiration.
Yeah, I have to tell you, it actually even comes across in your email how much respect that you have for your staff.
Oh, well, they're fantastic. They're
so it really,
amazing.
It's clear that you have a great group of folks working with you, and it's clear for them that they have a supervisor who values the work that they're doing. So it, even in your email, it really comes across.
Thank you.
It's good stuff. It's good stuff. So what is the ultimate goal for AVP?
Well, the ultimate goal is to stop violence from occurring to all people, but specifically violence that impacts lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer, and HIV-affected people. And, you know, to do that, one of the things that we've been sort of talking about but haven't said explicitly, you know, to do that, we are an organization, we're the largest organization in the country, and we have 23 people working at our organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a huge organization.
It's not a lot.
The way that we do it is that we have this incredible cadre of activists and volunteers who want to do something about this issue but aren't working full-time at AVP, and so they volunteer for us. And I think that the way we're going to reach our ultimate goal is to recognize that this activism and this volunteering is the backbone of the anti-violence movement, and that we need everyone to think that this is the issue that they need to work on. And I mean folks from the LGBTQ and HIV-affected communities, but we need our allies to working on this issue, too,
yeah,
and to recognize that, you know, violence against any of us is violence against all of us. And so, you know, we actually put out our March e-newsletter was dedicated to volunteering because April is National Volunteer Month, and we wanted to recognize that. And we have phenomenal volunteers, and we have great volunteer opportunities. And that's true of all of the anti-violence programs across the country. And if folks are interested in volunteering, they can certainly contact us through our website or through our hotline. But really, they can go online to avp.org and find the local anti-violence program in their area,
yeah,
if there is one, because not every state has one. But if there is one, and can volunteer there. And I think that's how we're going to get to the ultimate goal. When enough people stand up and say, this is my issue, this is the thing that I want to stop, and we're all going to do this together, that's how we're going to stop people from being so violent and discriminatory against LGBTQ folks.
I mean, you approach it on such an individual and community basis, and just to have those parallel tracks, it's going to enable so much more, and I'm sure has enabled so much more success. It's really, it just seems to be, yeah, that's the way to do it.
Exactly, because you can't, you know, it's not easy navigating an organization that has both direct services and community organizing and public advocacy. Like, there are some inherent differences about how you approach the work. But I think that, you know, AVP is one of the few organizations in the country that does that. And I think it's critical, because if we're not talking to the people most affected by violence, then what are we organizing
Right, what are we doing?
And if all we're doing is talking to people most affected by violence, then then we're not organizing.
Right.
So, you know, I think there really has to be this sort of synergy between the two approaches to violence.
You so clearly love your work.
I do.
Isn't that good?
I do. I really do. I feel incredibly lucky to be able to be doing this work and with so many just astoundingly smart and strategic and funny and wonderful people.
Oh, well, as the incoming senior development officer, I'm just so excited to get started.
I love it at AVP Canada. It's great.
So excited. Now, give us the hotline number for people who need it.
So the hotline number is 212-714-1141. It's a 212 area code, but that doesn't mean you have to be in New York City to call. If you're calling from outside of New York City, then we'll find a place to refer you to. We'll find a local agency. The website is avpforantiviolenceproject.org. And on the website, you can find resources for other places in the country, and you can also find our information. But most importantly, you can also report violence that happens. So, you know, one of the things that we do in providing direct services is working with folks who have experienced the violence.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that we do through our National Coalition of Anti-Violence Programs is monitor violence that's happened across the country. And each year we issue a national report on hate violence and on domestic and intimate partner violence. And so folks who have witnessed something but don't necessarily feel like they need counseling or want to reach out over the internet first and don't necessarily want to call a hotline can report violence to our website as well. And there's a big button on the front of our website that says report violence here.
With the hotline, what percentage of calls outside of New York do you guys get on the hotline?
It varies.
Yeah.
After tonight, I suspect the percentage is going to go up. But we have always had folks call us from outside of the country, and I mean outside of the city, and even outside of the state.
Okay.
And that's just the reality of not having enough resources to create enough local anti-violence programs that we think are necessary. We think, you know, local is key because you have to understand the culture
yeah,
and the environment that
huge.
People live in.
That's huge.
But if local isn't available, then we want people to know that there is a place to reach out for help.
That's fantastic. Well, I'm going to end with, this is a quote from you. So I'm actually ending with a quote from you. You could just sit there. I'll do your quote. I didn't even need you, as we established.
The easiest interview ever, Ken.
Every interviewer should be on DayQuil. This is from you. We have to change the culture of hate. We have to demand immediate equality because we have been put on notice. It is literally deadly to wait. The people who are dying, who are harmed, are our children, our friends, and neighbors. Stand up. Stand up against homophobia. Stand up against violence. Stand up for those who can't and with those who can. It's pretty good stuff, Sharon.
Well, thank you.
That's good stuff. You really, I mean, this is work that it's so unbelievably vital to our community. And I think it is work that some people look at and say, oh gosh, I could never do that. I'm intimidated by that. But in your demeanor, in the work, the efforts, the energy that you all at AVP are putting out there, you're saying, no, get involved with us. This is something that we all need to be involved in because we can make a difference together. It's just
exactly.
Unbelievable work.
Exactly. Well, thanks. That was really, really lovely and beautiful, and thank you. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and to talk to all the folks who listen to your fantastic program about why this work is so critical and why it can be really, really inspiring
yeah.
to do as
yeah.
well.
Well, we would love to have you back on the show, Sharon. My voice will sound completely different the next time.
Anytime. What are you doing next Wednesday? Is that good?
I'll still be in bed, Sharon. Oh, man. You are great work. Please say hello to all of your staff. I mean, you've only been my supervisor for about 30 minutes now, but so excited. Is it a big office? Do I have a big office? What's the deal?
It's a medium-sized office.
All right. I'll take medium. And it's right by Macy's.
We are literally half a block, but that's not as fun as it sounds, especially sort of October through December.
No, yes, I do recall.
To Macy's, yeah.
I do recall. Well, thank you for all of the work that you're doing. Our best to your entire staff there, and you're going to keep doing it, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Ken. This is really fun, and it was a really great opportunity to talk about the work. I appreciate it.
All the best, Sharon.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
And that was Sharon Staple from the Anti-Violence Project. What incredible, incredible work they are doing down there in New York City, not just in the New York City community, but for the entire country, for the entire country. So get involved. Go to avp.org. Look up what they're doing. That hotline, again, is 212-714-1141. It is 24 hours. It is bilingual. Live without fear. Live without fear. Gosh, what an unbelievable honor to talk to some incredible folks who are making such a difference in this community. So thanks to Sharon Staple and the entire Anti-Violence Project. My voice is obviously almost gone, so I'm going to move along with our little gay radio show here. As always, there are so many ways to get in touch with us. Drop us an email at thisshowisogay@aol.com. Every single email gets answered. What are you thinking? What guests do you want? Drop us an email, thisshowisogay@aol.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com, where you can listen to past shows. You can check out upcoming guests next week. Oh boy. Next week, it's Rachel Kinsey and Trixie Kinsey from the Kinsey Six. They are incredible. That's going to be a blast. I'm so excited. And of course, stroll on over to the Facebook, type in "This Show Is So Gay," like us. We sure as heck like you. And that about wraps things up here at the show. So get out there, go make a difference, research how you can be anti-violence, because you really can make a difference, and we all have to do it. So get out there and make a difference. Remember, above all else, my friends, why be gay when you can be so gay?
I drive too fast, pull me over to tell me so. I say out here on the prairie, any speed is too slow. I miss Brooklyn, I miss my crew. Let's start over, I missed my cue. Guess I forgot who I was talking to. I should have recognized that fierce look in his eyes. I've seen it in my mirror so many times. He's gonna put his 2 cents in, cause he's got a gun. But I'm gonna put in 3, cause history owes me 1. Yes, I can hear to see some stuff for myself. I mean, why leave the telling up to everybody else? Maybe God's country, but this is my country too. Yeah, move over, Mr. Holiness. Let the little people go.